Welcome to Seize the GM. I'm your host, Zendad.
I'm your co-host, Jules.
And I'm Null Operations.
Have you ever had a great idea for a campaign? Do you have a bunch of friends who want to play an RPG but have no one to run it?
Do you want to see what the world is like behind the GM screen instead of in front of it? Well, we're here to help you do just that.
Each week, the three of us will be discussing various GMing topics. Terminology, maps, atmosphere, world building, you name it. So sit back and relax, and let us help you improve your art of GMing, one show at a time.
Banter, banter, banter. And we are entering the banter segment. And welcome back to another episode of Seize the GM. Cool. So what have you guys been up to this week?
I just got back from Gen Con, so attempting to reorganize my sleep schedule and then fighting my inbox at work. Oh,
ouch.
So much emails!
Never take a vacation.
Well, you
pretty
did.
Much.
Yeah, and I'm still regretting it.
I know. how about you, gents? Come on. I was at Gen Con for the last week and a half, so what about you guys?
I've been working on some posts for the Seize the GM website, some more card catalog character sheets to put up, brainstorming for future ideas, and pulling out old, well-loved books to dive deep, deep, deep into, say, 1992 to make another set of characters.
Nice. Excellent. Well, my week, well, yeah, it sucked. It was weird because it was the week before and during Gen Con. That's where my week, like, because the last 2 weeks have kind of bled all together, because when my mom got put in the hospital very suddenly, that threw an entire week off. And then this week has kind of been just recovering from dealing with the aftermath. Though I did get to talk to her last night, and she sounded really like she's coming along well. So hopefully she will be making a full recovery, or as full as can be expected. So
well done. Yeah. Well done.
And I would officially like to say thank you to everybody that contributed when we were trying to raise the money, because while I was sure that we would make it eventually, everybody that came out of the woodworks and just started giving money, we hit the limit and then went over by $150 in less than 24 hours. And we were asking for like $1,200. So we made over $1,300 in 1 week or 1 day. So I would just like to say thank you to everybody that contributed. And you all got your money back because my mother did not pass away.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, the prognosis and diagnosis was pretty...
It was pretty dire.
Yeah, it was very grim. So it's kind of one of those, you don't expect that. Whoa.
Yeah, and then she, like, woke up and was like, do everything you can to make me live. And they were like, okay. So hopefully in the next few days, she'll actually be released. So by the time this episode actually goes out, she should actually be in an assisted living place, because she's undergoing like lots and lots of dialysis right now, trying to get her kidneys to jumpstart. So we'll see how that all works. But enough of the grim reality that is life. And let's talk about, instead, still having fun when you're a GM. Because I have just experienced what is not fun, and I would much rather have been gaming at all during these last 2 weeks. So, basically the idea is that you need to make sure that you are still having fun as the GM, because it's supposed to be fun for everyone,
mm-hmm.
including whoever's running the game.
Yeah, usually everyone kind of always sees the GM as the guy that drew the short stick. And that means that you don't enjoy it. Something ain't right.
Yeah.
You know, getting the short stick is like, oh, crap. You know, I wasn't planning on it. But, you know, if you're running something, you ought to want to run it, you know.
Yeah.
No one likes that railroad stuff.
Right. Yeah, because that all makes for a really rough, rough time. So
we're going to share some of the techniques and some of the ideas we have to help you as a GM keep having fun while you're running instead of playing. And so we've kind of come up with some of what we think are the strongest ways we've done it and what we think are the strongest ways we've seen other people do it.
Either that or not just that. It's also a lot of people were like, oh, I don't want to run. It's boring. You know, a way to actually is like, no, it's not. That if you're finding it boring, then something's wrong. Like what you look for to is like, oh, that's delightful. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's an important thing, I guess, is, you know, if you're a new GM, you're just coming onto this and everyone has that stigma of it's much more fun to play than GM. And sometimes it is, but being a GM doesn't have to be drudge. It can be just as entertaining.
And yeah, it really can, actually.
Oh yeah, especially if you know the entire table looks at you and you're like, how? And they have no idea how the heck you set everything up. You know that little, and then everyone's doing it, and you're just kind of like doing that evil finger steepling, you know, thing in the background. Like, oh yes,
twirling twirling the mustache. Yes.
Well, I don't have a mustache. Zippy has a mustache.
You get him to twirl his mustache because he's got a big mustache. Enough that he can do that.
That's kind of my first point for GMs. My first thing is feel free to be silly. It's okay to laugh. It's okay for the NPCs to absolutely fail and do something silly and horrendous. It's okay to let the PCs fail spectacularly if they kind of bumble into it. It's also okay to let the PCs succeed. And if you're not able to laugh at rolling a natural one and the big bad dragon stubs its toe and falls into a pit. You may have other issues. Keep it fun by giving yourself that license, giving yourself permission to not just be on the other side of the game master screen, but to laugh. If you're too straight-faced, or we mentioned the railroading problem, if you try to railroad an adventure too much, it's not going to be as much fun. And that's being open to those moments.
Yeah.
Is one of the ways to help you keep having fun.
And the thing is also is, you know, okay, you're planning for a game, everything's set up, everything's cool. All right. And especially after coming back from Gen Con and the wonders of Con Crud, if you're running a game and you know, you are really feeling nastily under the weather, don't. Because then you're not going to be having fun because you're not well. And that experience is going to taint because, all right, you run something when you're sick. You can't remember half of it. You're really not on your A game. And then you're coming back the next week when you're probably on your A game, but you still have all those nasty memories, you know?
Don't let yourself be sick.
Yeah. A mild cold, something like that. But it's if you are really in a crap, like physical or mental space and you've got to run, but if you're not having fun, because the fun starts with you, you start the story, you set the world. if you're not enjoying it, your players aren't going to, you know, with that whole buy-in we talked about last week, they're not going to buy in because you're not having fun telling it. You know, unless it's a super duper crazy unique event or something like that, it's all right. You know, real life always comes first.
Hey, guys, I feel horrible and I'd rather not try to kill you because I have a stabbing headache in real life. Can we just play some Uno?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and
there's nothing wrong with taking a break and playing something else even, you know.
Yeah. Yahtzee.
Yeah, anything like that actually is...
Oh, you already got dice games. For it.
Exactly, you've got the dice.
Yeah. Yep, board games even, like anything. If you're not feeling up to it, don't force yourself to do it because you will have a subpar game and it will... While you may not be like, oh, it'll be fine, if your players know that you're not feeling well and are not really in it, they won't be either. And that can hurt a game. It won't kill a game, but I've seen it really hurt games.
Oh, yeah.
Because when the GM is seriously just not able to tell everybody, hey, we're there. We're doing the right thing. This is cool. Everybody's having fun. Instead, everybody's just like, what is wrong with him? Or her, whichever, you know, what's wrong with the GM? Why is this not as awesome as it normally is?
And the other thing is also is you might not know that you're not on your, I mean, like illness or not, but you might not know that you're not on your A game. And the thing is, the one thing is, it's in GMing, it is a feedback loop. Okay. You know, if your players aren't having fun, you're not having fun, it's a big whole antagonistic thing. Listen to what your players are saying. Because, you know, you feed off their joy in their own way. You kind of feed, you know, in crafting a story, you take what they've done and build upon it. Now,
this comes to another great one, which is that collaborative storytelling element.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, all games are supposed to have. I mean... That's the whole beauty of it, is it's collaborative storytelling at its most fundamental. Even if you're playing like the most, you know, simulationist game that there is, there's still an element of that collaborative storytelling. Because you may be, you know, as a GM, you may be like, I've got the perfect plot for everything to happen. Wah. But there's an old military saying, and that is, you know, no plan survives first contact. Because as soon as you put the random element of all these people at the table.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have control. You're kind of along for the ride, and you should accept that you're going to be along for part of the ride.
Well, and that's the feedback loop and the collaborative storytelling go hand in hand. I mean, we've all had that experience where we mutter to ourselves, of course I'm running this kind of game. It's the exact kind of game I want to play that no one else will run in tone mm-hmm. and style. And if that's the case, make sure it really is the thing you want to run. Because then you get to help tell the story as much and sometimes more than the players.
And not just that, you might inspire someone else to, it's like, I like this kind of thing. And they might be interested in GMing and you get to play.
Exactly. Now,
if you make GMing fun, if you actually, not the fake smile, car salesman, lawyer, smiley bullshit. You know, if you are genuinely enjoying yourself. You might inspire someone else to run it, or maybe something similar. Like, say you're playing, all right, say, like, Champions, okay? And, all right, you might love it, and you enjoy playing it. Well, somebody might not exactly love this system, but if they see how much fun you're having with the superhero game, they may pick up Mutants and Masterminds.
Which you is know? A great system, by the way.
I need to
Champions.
Play it.
Champions.
No. Mutants and Masterminds. Mutants and Masterminds and DC Adventures, the new one by Green Ronin, are the same system, and they're so good. They are great for telling stories.
They are good and they are great, but champions.
No.
I can make anything.
I know you can. That's the problem with it. Though you can get really, really creative with any game, and that's the beauty of them. I mean, there are ways to make... I mean, there's another podcast that talks about every time they talk about like the various classes in Pathfinder, because they'll do like an episode about each class and they'll talk about it and everything else. But they always have what they refer to as the Batman test. How close can I make this character to Batman? Because he's supposed to be kind of like a bit of everything, and he can do all kinds of stuff. And that's great, and it makes a whole lot of sense, but, you know, not everything is about that. So it's kind of fun, though. But that's one thing that they do is that. And yeah, it's not bad.
But moving back to collaborative storytelling, because we got off track as we are wont to do, remember that being a GM doesn't make you less of a part of that storytelling. And I've seen GMs and I've seen people kind of feel like they either...
You're not a scorekeeper.
Yeah, they were stuck between, I've seen, just kind of the scorekeeper there to roll dice and compare numbers, and people who tried to take over too much. In fact, I may have been guilty of that in my younger days, of trying to railroad too much to a specific story. Remember the collaborative part, and it's going to be easier to have fun.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the other thing is also to have fun. One... When you're behind the screen, you have to be comfortable. You got to be, you know, have your little binkies, have your little things that, you know, if you might get anxious or nervous or something like that, get some like almonds or something like that, so you can crunch them, kind of keep your own thing down. Then you're going to enjoy it more. If you can preemptively head off any other mental or physical tics, like you can't stand up very long. Okay. You make sure you have your squishiest, comfiest shoes, support on the chair, and a long kind of pokey stick so you can poke your players. Hey, move that mini.
Yeah.
I recommend the poking stick. It has been used for great effect. And here's a bonus with it. If you have a nice, long, straight poking stick, you can actually do it to set up like lines of sight and stuff like that from where you're sitting, which is kind of helpful. And everyone's all like, ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. Though that is one thing, yeah. But there's another part of this, and that's, you know, you don't want to be... It's not that hard adversarial, like, the GM
don't make it the GM versus the players.
The player. Yeah, you can't do that.
There are games that are like that. There are games that are like that, but you got to know that in advance. But
right,
know,
this is a general...
Dungeons and Dragons, yeah. But the thing is also, be aware of those games. So that way you don't like, oh, crap.
D&D you know. Shouldn't be GM versus players.
No,
and it shouldn't. And that's one of the tropes that can be fallen into that can make people fall out of D&D. You, as the GM, with a few exceptions of games that are specifically designed where you are supposed to be challenging them, and that's the point of the game, say, Paranoia. Don't forget that you are playing the rest of the world. And so yep. You don't have to be antagonistic. You certainly are going to be running the adventure. You're in charge of the challenges. You are in charge of the antagonists, but the world and the adventure they are in is yours to embody. And so help immerse them. Give them honest answers. Give them honest choices. But it doesn't have to be about finding every way to make sure that they lose.
Yep. Right. And the other thing is, as somebody who, we all know those people that have every 3.5 book, have memorized every 3.5 book down to the chapter. You know, the thing is, sometimes something weird comes up, just make a call and be comfy with it. You know, as long as the players know, it's like, set that kind of stuff up in advance. It's like, okay, you know, if weird situations come up, we're going to make a call and then we're going to go on. So then there's not going to be an argument starting. No one likes arguing. No one likes, you know, getting up in the GM's face and shit. You know, and the GM doesn't like screaming down another player.
No, you know, it should never actually come to a screaming match.
Depends.
It really shouldn't.
But yeah. It's that kind of a thing.
If it comes to a screaming match, something else has broken. And that's something to keep in mind. Because if you're literally screaming at players, then something else in the system or something else in the game itself has actually broken.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's a very rough thing to deal with. So you don't want to have that kind of true adversarial role going on unless the game is specifically geared around that.
Or that kind of stuff. Yeah. And there are. But the thing is, that adversarial relationship is built into the game to be fun and funny.
Yes.
You know.
Now, here's something else for gaming groups. If you're listening together, or if you're a PC who's trying to figure out what your GM's dirty little tricks are listening to this podcast, we would take care of our GM because, well, they're running and I don't have to keep up with 50 bajillion characters. Hey, do you need a refill? I'm about to grab a snack. Do you need anything? No, let me go ahead. No, wait. What's your favorite whiskey? Yeah, we brought some.
And yeah.
From that side of it, from the group side, there's...
Bribe your GM.
Well,
it's not more of a, you know, oh, let my character win. It's more of the, we appreciate you.
It's not bribery. It is merely appropriate supplication.
Yes, because as I am wont to do, my groups used to all the time. It was really funny because everybody, they would get... sorry about that. They would bring a bag of Reese's Cups.
The minis?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, they would get one bag for the table, and then they would give me a separate bag because they knew that was the one, like, out of candy, that's one of the only ones that I'll actually eat. So they would just get them, and they'd just give them to me, like, all the time. And it's kind of funny. I, you know, it's cool, but I never expect it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's, like, my wife plays in my group, so, like, we'll be getting, you know, and we don't play at our house anymore. We play at one of the players' houses. And, like, he'll be like, you know, as soon as he goes up to get a cup of coffee, he's asking everybody at the table, hey, you guys need coffee, coffee, coffee? You know, just goes around the table, goes and makes coffee, and then brings everybody's coffee back. You know, so that only one person is gone so I can keep running the game. And instead of, like, everybody just getting up and piling out to go do that, which I've seen happen before in games, where they'll just, like, everybody breaks because it's, oh, it's coffee time. Okay, let's go. And it's like, whoa. Mm-hmm. Nobody's having fun here. There's a problem.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't like when we have to break for big sections of time. So, yeah.
All right. And my last piece of advice for all you GMs. Organization will set you free. When you do your prep work, it's easier to have fun when you're not having to scramble. You've read your adventure a couple of times, or you've laid out your basics. Make sure your dice are organized. Make sure the NPCs that you need are at your fingertips, or at least if you're just going to be winging it, you know what the difficulty is going to be. You have a basic idea. Organization means you're not stressing and scrambling at the last minute, and that is something that keeps you from having fun. When you start stressing out and start having to, in a bad way, a negative way, figure out what you're doing next. It makes it harder. But if you've got the basics right in front of you, if you've got the basic roles in front of you and a little note cards worth of, this PC needs this kind of a challenge for a random encounter, it becomes a lot more fun when you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Organization will set you free.
Yeah, if you have some... And note-taking.
Preferably delegate that to a player as the scribe or official secretary and have them do the note-taking for the previous adventures.
If you if you have somebody in the group that likes doing that.
Yeah, because the thing is, like, if the other one is like, if you've got a netbook or a laptop, okay, after the adventure, do a quick type-up. But the thing is, though, that when you're running something, remember that actions do have consequences, and if you write down what the players did, you can actually figure out, okay, how would what they have done affect the world since you have it written down? Yeah. You know, they were at the bar. They didn't tip. Okay, now no one in the town will serve them. Something like that.
Yeah. You know, you can do all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be big. Does not have to be big, but it can be they let something live, or they didn't see something, you know, that kind of crap.
Yeah. Yep. But that's always fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, well, as we so lovely and eloquently love to say, we are still just kind of scratching at all of the little bits that surround this massive topic. So, we will probably come back to elements of this at later points. So,
oh, heck yeah.
Yeah, so once we do, you know, until then, you know, we'll get back to it.
Until then, remember to have fun, laugh, don't make it antagonistic, and come prepared and organized.
Yep. Yeah, and I'll be honest, you don't have to be completely silly, but what you can do is, you know, funny t-shirts always are a good way. You know, I'm a player, I'm sitting in a game, and we're doing a noir spy game, and I have a t-shirt that says Innocent Bystander. And the GM did not notice my shirt until about 10, 20 minutes in there, and he looked, and he just started cracking up. A little bit of the tension was broken, a little bit of that stress, and then went right back into it, and actually it was a little bit better.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, little things to make somebody smile will actually go a long way.
Oh, wow. Yeah, they will. That's one thing.
Yep.
So, I guess this is us rolling into stat blocks. And now we enter stat blocks. This is a segment where you can use something that we've created in your game tonight. All right.
Who's going first?
I nominate you.
Why me?
Because you asked.
God friggin', man.
All right, here's the way we'll do it. You, me, garde manger.
All right.
Okay.
All right. You still suck.
I know.
Yeah. Okay. All right, what I've got is the Red Queen's Last Testament. The Red Queen rules over the Domain of Death. One of the groups who serve her have come to be known as the Red Queen's Last Testament. This ragtag random group of mages, clerics, knights, sorcerers, necromancers, and assassins travel the world searching for the uninterred dead, those poor souls who haven't undergone last rites and burial honors. When they happen upon a body or a skeleton, either a cleric or the necromancer will cast a spell to speak with the dead, and they will find out how the poor soul met their end. And depending on how the person died, that will guide their next actions. For example, if a person was murdered, then they gather as much information as they can. and then they turned that information over and evidence to the servitors of the God of Justice. The death is avenged and justice is meted out. If the person died in battle, they will then gather up as many of the individual's weapons and gear that they can find and dress the fallen warrior to the best of their ability. After the specifics are known, the last testament will ask the fallen what their final wishes are and how they would like to be interred. This ensures closure not just for the fallen, but the fallen's family and friends. The dead who have no family or friends usually bequeath the remaining belongings to the last testament, and this action does help fund their mission. The Last Testament have a good working relationship with some of the other gods and their followers. The followers of the God of Justice are grateful for information regarding justice denied. The God of Knowledge servitors are grateful that knowledge and stories are rediscovered and shared. Aside for some rigid gods of order and some competing gods of death, the Last Testament is usually well received. When joining the order, each member swears an oath for a term of service of lifetime plus 100 years. When a member dies of natural or unnatural causes, as sometimes happens, they are resurrected as an undead, bound to protect and defend the current members of the order and their holy sites. After 100 years, the undead is released from his service and his spirit once again returns to the bosom of the Red Queen. Their actions in both life and death are recorded in the annals as a defiant stand against those who would relegate the dead to obscurity.
Cool.
I like it.
Still kind of dark, but not as morbid as I usually get.
That is true.
I thought you'd like that. That's cool. Zippy came up with the idea. We were like chit-chatting, and he came up with this. And he's like, I'm like, oh, that's cool. And then we go back and forth. So that's usually how I get some of the really good ones, if it's not horror-related. All right, Zen, you're up.
I am up. Yay! Up. All right. Today, we have Aethelwulf. From the cold tundra comes the lumbering form of a giant. She is known as Aethelwulf to the bards. The breath of the wolf to others. Once she comes down from the tundra, the winter winds come with her. She is called a witch by some and a force of nature by others. The club that she carries strapped to her back is the length of two large men. Bits of frozen blood still cling to it. While some think she's a witch and a hag giant, she's actually a manifestation of the North Winds. Her form looks like a single piece of smooth sculpted ice. The polar bear furs and club are the only things not made of ice. Her body actually creates waves of cold that billow out from her. All the time. Now, some of her mannerism type things. She does not view things like mortals, since she's been around far longer than man. She views things at a glacial speed. All things happen as they should. When she comes out of the frozen north, it's usually to put something back where it belongs.
Nice.
Damn, dude. Wow.
Yeah.
You're good.
I started with just a name.
Really?
Yeah. Well, when I was doing all the dog days, I was doing a lot of these just little simple mm-hmm. bits, and I wanted to have like some fantasy names. So I pitched out to some people that I know. I said, hey, give me some fantasy type names. And Jeffrey from the World Builder's Anvil gave me that one.
Oh.
And I'm like, this is too awesome.
Thank you, Jeffrey, because that was bloody brilliant. We got good stuff because of your suggestion. You're awesome.
Yeah, and then there's another one for the next show that's from another listener. So. But I'm not going to give that away yet.
Wait.
I know. One more week. You have to wait.
Oh, yeah. We're fine with it.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be good. So,
Garmanger. Yay!
All right. I'm going to take you to a place now. We've had a group. We've had an entity. So now we've got a place. And that's the corner of June and Hospice. You see, the quiet and unassuming corner of June Street and Hospice Boulevard is often overlooked day to day. Now, that really is a shame. The corner seems to have strange properties and attracts the stranger, wilder, and more magical parts of the city. The corner, with its alley not far away, is in the shadow of a stone building built with a neoclassical style with a single, lone streetlight that no one remembers ever losing power. June and Hospice is where you go to strike a good deal and a fair bargain for all things magical. For whatever reason, the deals there always seem to happen at arm's length and reflect a well-made and equitable bargaining. A true marketplace for both buyers and sellers. Now, nobody claims ownership of the corner, and whatever enchantment this is, perhaps because of the second unusual protection the corner offers, trying to cheat or harm another person who is at the corner sees the city itself rise up against you. No muggings take place underneath this streetlight. No fraudulent goods change hands, and neither fist nor charm is thrown with bad intent. In fact, the last person who tried found themselves stumbling through the swarm of bugs that crawled from the alley, tripping over the sidewalk and crashing into the streetlight to die of electrocution. The next day, the corner was back to normal, the streetlight shining, and business resumed. Perhaps you need a safe place to meet or a trusted place to deal. Perhaps you'll be on the run and cornered, pardon the pun, at June and Hospice. Perhaps you'll need to find out how to stop this enchantment. One way or another, the corner of June and Hospice will find its way into your game. The secret, you see, is not in the corner, but the building on the corner itself. One of the pieces of stone used when it was being built in 1890, part of the American Renaissance architectural trend, came from the freshly excavated Temple of Zeus at Olympia. A part of Zeus's godhead came with this symbolic shard of stone, and his protection over marketplaces and hospitality now extends to this urban corner.
Cool.
Hell yeah. That was awesome.
Cool. Nice, I like sir. That. That is awesome. All right.
What I find interesting is all three of us, without coordination, had some similar themes this week.
Yeah.
Yeah. How the hell do we do that? All right, who's the mind player?
I was going to say, great minds think alike, don't they?
So do insane ones. Which ones are we?
Yes.
Do we have to choose?
As I say, I think the answer to that is yes. I mean, that's usually what it is to me, so. So, yeah. Yeah, that is kind of crazy that we all kind of went in that direction. So.
Yeah.
All right. So, let's go ahead and jump right into Lexicon.
Lexicon.
Lexicon, where we give you cool words to help improve your vocabulary. Okay, and the word for this week is relic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's an easy one. Lots of people know what relic is.
But it's still a cool word.
It is. It's actually in the bottom 40% of words used in the U.S. So, it is an object, well, there's four definitions, actually. So, it is an object esteemed and venerated because of association with a saint or martyr. So, like a souvenir or memento of that person.
The saint's relics that you'll find in Catholic and Orthodox religions are what this is referring to. Capital R, relics of the saints that are often enshrined in various houses of worship.
Yep. And then you have relics, plural, which is usually in reference to the remains or a corpse of someone. And then you have number three, which is a survivor or remnant left after decay, disintegration, or disappearance. And four is a trace of some past or outmoded practice, custom, or belief. Now, the origin and etymology.
Latin.
Well, yes. Which it's from relinquary?
Reliquae.
No, that's middle. There's late Latin, which is... it actually comes from... actually, that would be... The one that you're talking about is medieval Latin. Like, earliest Latin is actually earlier than that. See, I have it written down here.
If I remember my high school Latin correctly, it basically means bird skeleton.
Could be, but this is the one that I have from Merriam-Webster is relinquere, or to leave behind.
Also the basis of relinquish. Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, and it goes all the way up through like Anglo-French, which is reliqui, and...
Made the jump over to English.
And then Middle English, which is relique to relic. So, and its first known use was the 13th century. So, yay!
Always kind of cute.
Yeah.
Relics one of those, are nifty.
It's a simple word, but there's a lot going on if you don't know all of the big history behind it, which is kind of one of the cool things with it. So, all right. Well, I think we're going to get us some closing remarks, and we are going to get out of here, folks. So, Gardemanger, what do you got?
Remember to have fun. Remember to come up with good ideas. If you haven't watched The Defenders by now, watch it. It's got a lot of really good points, and I really, really like how they decided to tie everything with the hand together. Don't listen to the naysayers. Don't listen to the people who are just out there wanting to humbug it. Give it a good watch.
Okay. I have not seen it yet. I still have two previous seasons still to watch of other things. I have to get through Luke Cage and Iron Fist before I can start it.
Luke Cage has had the most definite sense of place and time of all of the Netflix series.
Yeah, I can see that. See, I love the Daredevil ones, and I'm going to say this, and people are going to hate me for it, but I hated the Jessica Jones one.
You and I have had this discussion before where I don't hate you, but I allow you to be wrong.
You can think that, but yeah, I do not like the actress, and I did not. And this is where Jules is going to hate me, because I didn't like David Tennant in it.
Hey, the thing is, you might like an actor, but you might not like all of his roles.
Yeah, that's
your opinion on it. You know, there are a lot of people who are pissed off he's voicing Scrooge McDuck.
Oh, I don't care about that. Yeah, no, I think he... They did it at a time when he was still coming down from all of his, you know, Doctor Who-ness. And I think they were kind of playing on that. And I think it actually did a big disservice to the character.
Yeah, so, I can see that.
That's probably what my biggest complaint with him as, you know...
Was it him, or was it the direction that you've got?
It could have been. My opinion, it's more like the writing. Because if you think about it this way, though,
it very well could have been just been all of that combined. Jessica Jones, there was almost nothing about it that I enjoyed.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, if you think about it, though, Mark Hamill, after playing Luke Skywalker, had a much more difficult time getting main roles until he got the Joker.
Yeah.
And that's because you couldn't see his face. It's, you know, casting Luke Skywalker as the Joker is as crazy as casting Luke Skywalker as the Joker.
Yeah.
I think it was that kind of an idea.
Yeah. Yep.
That's me.
All right. So, I'm going to go. I have a game that I want, at some point, I want to get a chance to play it. I've only looked at it in the game at my local game store. And it is called Mutant Year Zero. And it is by a company called Modifius. And it looks amazing. And, it just, the artwork alone and the map, like, it's, that alone made me want to buy the game when I saw it. Without reading any of it, just those two things, the front cover, the dude has insect wings. And I'm like, that's amazing. And creepy as all hell, and I love it.
Nice.
Yeah, so it looks really cool. Hopefully I will be getting a copy of it and we will review it at some point.
Yikes.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun. It looks really good, so. All right, Jules, what do you got? Bring us home.
All right, I've got an author.
An author?
Uh-huh. I met her at Origins last year, and I got to see her again this year at Gen Con. Her name's Jennifer Brozek. She's a writer, game designer, editor, you name it, okay? She's got a lot of really awesome things. Hugo nominee, Bram Stoker nominee. She wrote a couple of Shadowrun short stories, one of them being Dock Wagon, which is one of my favorite of the short stories, because the thing is, she can hit any type of any genre, from horror to sci-fi to kind of like, I want to say kind of Victorian steampunk without it being the standard steampunk tropes.
Okay.
And the story is well written. It's they're all engaging. And you guys go on Amazon, you know, look what she's got, because I can't really say she's a sci-fi author, because she's done some fantasy, she's done some horror. But each one, it's not overdone like in the genre. It's not done like gore for gore's sake. Every scene that she creates fits her story. Fluff really doesn't exist, which I thought really neat. I mean, granted, descriptions galore, dialogue, but none of it felt fluff.
Okay.
You know, a sarcastic quip actually built up part of how we saw the character, you know? Some authors you've seen, it's like, why was that scene in there? You know? And I get that a lot with mystery and kind of noir stuff.
Yeah.
It feels padded. Her stuff is never padded. That I like. So it's, the problem is though, it makes it a faster read, I guess. For some people that might be annoying. And if you're like me and probably you too, you guys are like, ooh, a book. Okay.
Depends on how much time I have.
Yeah. But yeah, and she's probably one of the coolest people to talk to. She cares about people reading her stuff and what they think about it. You know, she likes listening not just to the praise, but to the critiques. As long as you're not a dick. And, you know, that's the one thing, is she loves the audience or her readers or however you'd want to describe it. You know, that actually is a big thing, is meeting people that like her stuff. She doesn't have that high, you know, that kind of like arrogance you've seen in certain authors.
Sure.
Nah, she's like the antithesis of that. And that kind of makes it real special, because, you know, she's happy you're reading. She's happy you're reading her books. It makes her happy. I'm like,
that's
sweet.
Really cool.
Yeah. And she also has a Doctor Who tattoo on her arm. So we both kind of showed off our Doctor Who tattoos to each other. We're like, oh, that's so cool. So also, she's a Whovian. So a double bonus right there. You know, but, you know, check out her stuff. And if you like it, write a review about her stuff on Amazon or tell your friends. You know, because if you find an author you like, you want them to keep authoring, right? That means they got to sell stuff to get paid. So whatever you like, support your artist, buy their stuff, and hype them out when you're there.
Yes.
Yes, which indeed. Is eventually why I'm going to be hyping your services as a painter, sir.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, yeah, your ability to paint minis and all that other good stuff. Sure, you have no idea what I'm talking about.
I disavow all knowledge of both of you.
Yeah. Yeah. Eventually, I'll finish. Eventually, I will finish my bones set. I'm actually getting down to a fairly manageable amount now. So I actually have to get back into doing it because I've been off for the last, like, 2 months, it feels like. Shortly after we got back from Origins, I like cranked out a bunch of them, and then kind of July hit, and I haven't painted anything really.
Well, you were moving and stuff too, man.
That was in June. I was already moved in by the time I got my bone stuff, but
yeah, but it's unpacking, and then it's getting used to the new house and unpacking. So don't hurt yourself too much on that one, sweetheart.
Well, part of it's also I started my new campaign, and we've been building scatter terrain and stuff. So I've got we just finished building, painting, and sealing all of the like stalagmite, stalactite features, giant mushroom features. Yeah. So I'm going to probably post some pictures of those on the Facebook group. So yeah, join the Facebook group.
Yes. Yes. We got a couple new members.
We did get a couple of new members. So yeah. So you need to come over there because we are somebody's almost always on there talking about something, usually trying to at least. And yeah, so once we get all this figured out with the blog posts, hopefully we will start churning those out for everybody here pretty soon. So that will be another thing that you guys can check out that we're working on. Mm-hmm. So you'll see all of those in our Facebook postings and Twitter postings and all of those other fun things. So yeah, it won't just be episodes. It will also be blog posts. So, all right, well, I guess this is going to wrap it up. And until next week, guys, have fun.
Bye.
See you later.
You can contact us or the show by using Twitter, Facebook, or regular old email. Our Twitter accounts are at Zendead,
at Jules Podcaster,
and at No Operations.
And the show's Twitter account is at Seize the GM.
And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/SeizeTheGM.
You can email questions or comments to the show at admin@SeizeTheGM.com.
You can email me at Zendead@SeizeTheGM.com.
Me at Jules@SeizeTheGM.com.
And me at NullOperations@SeizeTheGM.com.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Seize the GM. Feel free to leave a comment about this episode on our webpage, www.SeizeTheGM.com. Let the dice fall where they may, and we'll see you again next week.
Seize the GM is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share Alike 4.0 International License. All copyrighted materials referenced herein are held by the respective owners. No infringement is intended, and no claim of ownership is implied.
The music for the show is Dreaming Spirit, off of the album Ghost Machine, by the Enigma TNG. His music is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License.